Very,
which
very
is
good.
Really useful. Oops.
No, it's okay. Crap headphones.
So.
Well, please, I have to make sure you look. Your plan
anything
first.
You want to have repeated?
No, that was perfect.
That
just
was really
don't
good, eh?
Want to lose it because of this.
That's a nice view here. Yeah.
Now the cameras look like a bit.
Okay, I'm talking now. Are you hearing me?
Yeah, now you're back.
Okay, so we got to 940. We moved into a new building. Well, the 940 was coming. We moved into a new building. We just started working day and night, literally. I remember reaching a period where I was doing one of my qualifying exams and trying to do all this programming for Doug, where I actually had to send my family back to my wife's parents in Seattle for a month because they couldn't live with me. I mean, it was... We wouldn't go home until 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. We'd be back at work at 8. It was pretty amazing. So the whole thing built toward the demo. The 68 demo was the catalyzing force. Quite honestly, Doug was very difficult to work with during this period of time. Primarily because he wanted more than anybody could ever do. And he wanted all kinds of things implemented where there was no chance that we were going to make it. But we got through it. We got up to the demo. I remember being so afraid that this thing was going to crash. One of the interesting stories. A couple of them. He wanted more and more features right up to the time of the demo. And I remember freezing the code like a month before the demo. And I refused, you know, password protected, and refused to allow anybody to change files or add features. And Doug was all mad at me, and it was tense times. Anyway, we got through it. There is an interesting story. Another thing that I did was I worked with Peter Deutsch at Berkeley, and we built in an extremely fast recovery system so that if the program crashed, it would actually analyze the data files on the drum, fix errors, and come back up and do it at an amazing speed. And if you take the 68 film and you go through it one frame at a time, you can find one frame in that film where it shows that the application crashed during Doug's demo.
We'll do that. How
so it was down for go? Down for a 24th of a second, and it came back.
And these guys are writing over Linux and all these things these days with Unix and, well, Solaris.
How did we build it in?
Yeah.
Oh, this was mostly Peter Deutsch's ideas of ways of structuring the data files and whatnot so that you could do extremely fast consistency checks and then come back. Mm-hmm. And if the machine was overloaded with users, this would take a few seconds. But during the demo, Doug was the only user. So it just happened so fast that there's only one frame.
How did the demo go?
That day,
do you remember?
I remember it. Well, I was in Menlo Park. I wasn't up there. Mm-hmm. I think we had a system crash. I think we had some phone line problems. But by and large, for us participating in it, it just went smoothly. You know, it was like it just all worked. We didn't see it as... You know, Alan Kay talks about it now as this religious experience and things like that. And for us, it was just like, wow, we made it through. Everything was okay. Nothing crashed terribly.
What was the party like afterwards?
I don't even remember. I do have another interesting story about the whole graduate school thing. So we got through all this and was really cooking. And I had to find a thesis topic at Stanford. And I went around and started, I really had to focus in now on a thesis topic. And I went around to the various people in the department at Stanford. And I couldn't get any of them interested in letting me turn the work I'd done for Doug into a PhD at Stanford, because it was too systems-oriented, and it wasn't theoretical enough, and computers were really for numerical analysis and computing, and this augmentation ideas and bootstrapping stuff and metacompilers and whatnot weren't real computer science. So I had to transfer to AI and do a weird theoretical omega order logic theorem proving thesis to get out of Stanford, which I've always looked back on as sort of a comment about how much vision some of the academic world has had.
Yeah.
So what else do you want us to talk about?
That was fantastic. Now, one thing visually, because we have, I think we have all the audio.
Yeah.
But
some,
if you guys can chit-chat a little bit so we can have more interaction.
Okay.
Why don't you...
Yeah, but it doesn't make sense if...
With a voiceover, what you're introducing, it's nice to have you too.
Okay, Okay, so what are you going to have for lunch?
What am I going to what?
Have for lunch.
What am I going to have for lunch? I haven't gotten that far yet. Chicken sandwich.
You know, she's been in California for a week and we still haven't been to Taco Bell.
We haven't, have we?
Well, let's see.
I've had burgers and milkshakes for every day.
Oh, you need to go to Estrelita. Do you know Estrelita?
Yeah.
So my family hates Estrelita, but I love it.
Mm-hmm.
So on El Camino in San Antonio. So you go down El Camino toward Mountain View from Palo Alto. And then where it crosses San Antonio, you turn right.
Yeah.
And you have to go up a block and make a U-turn.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chef Chu's is on the corner. Extremely famous Chinese restaurant. Next to it is Arby's, which is an Arby's, which has big signs. And then buried in behind that is Estrelita. And it's Chiapas food. Real Chiapas. From
that?
The Chiapas area of Mexico.
Oh, right, okay.
And they make their own sauces.
Yeah.
And their red and greens and moles are the best, really honest to God, true Chiapas moles you can get this side of San Diego, right? Of Tijuana.
Why don't we take you there tomorrow for lunch?
That would be fun.
Yeah?
Sure.
Yeah, that would be great.
We have no plans tomorrow.
Okay.
Tomorrow is
I can't. I'm going to Washington, D.C. tomorrow.
Oh.
But you guys can go there for dinner.
It's our last day tomorrow.
Next time,
when we're back.
So I should tell you the Stuart Brandt story also. People don't know this too much. So do you know who Stuart Brandt was?
No, I haven't.
Stuart Brandt, he's still around. He's working with Danny Hillis. He's working on the 1,000-Year Clock Project. And he was the author, producer, editor, whatever, of the Whole Earth Catalog.
Mm-hmm.
You know about the Whole Earth Catalog?
I've seen it, yes.
Okay, so he started that. And we all contributed articles, and this was all big thing because it was fun to produce at the time.
Yeah.
So we were writing little reviews. Bill English and I wrote little ones. And he won the Pulitzer Prize for that.
Oh, wow.
And actually went on to be sort of famous. And so back in the early 1980s, I think it was, you could interview him. I think it was about that time. Somebody was asking him about, there was some set of protests going on about something. And he documented things about the Vietnam War and stuff like that, too. Some set of protests going on about something. And someone was interviewing him about how these different groups over time, the ecologists and the anti-war people, had an impact on society. And they asked him who'd had the greatest impact. And he said, well, all these big protests that the newspapers report now are really transitory things. And the people who really had the impact were the people working all night writing code in Engelbart's group in the 60s. And I thought that was a wonderful compliment.
Do you know what the name of this documentary is?
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Invisible Revolution. Do you know why we chose that name? A similar McLuhan quote.
Ah, okay.
Because we haven't heard it directed. We were told McLuhan said that the people protesting with the banners, they're not the revolutionaries. Revolutionaries are the people of the phone company.
Well, so Stuart Brandt thought it was the guys writing code at SRI all night.
That is outstanding. I'm glad we got that on tape.
We have to interview him for the documentary.
Yeah,
he's still around. He was at he did the Unfinished Revolution seminar at Stanford.
Yeah, no, he's definitely around.
Maybe we should call it Unfinished Revolution.
That's what it is called. But a negative in our marketing effort is the fact that people don't know what this is. So we're taking the negative, the invisible, making it positive.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm done. Anything
yeah,
else?
Yeah, we need to run as well.
Okay.
Anything you want to add?
Let's do 2 more minutes, because then we're exactly half past. It's a nice...
Okay, so where to go? I don't know where to go with it. Well, what do you want to know about?
Do you want to say anything about Doc's work being very relevant at the moment? Anything in that?
Well... Well, I don't know how to go down that path.
No.
For one thing, Doug has had a very difficult time getting people to sponsor what he looks at as the real center foci of the research. And that's largely because everybody wants to work on their problem. So they don't want to build tools to bootstrap. They want to build tools to do a database search. They want their problem solved. And so he's just had a really hard time. Nobody has actually come out and funded things directly over all these years. That's part of it. I think the other part of it is that the world got... I don't know why, actually. So the world went down this path with the general purpose tools of wanting things easy, right? And, I mean, I saw... I think it was Itzhak Perlman did a thing about this recently, actually, about how difficult it is to learn the violin, but what a tremendous payoff you get if you learn to use the violin. Mm-hmm. And Alan Kay used to use that example. You can sit down with an organ and you can get up to a competent level almost instantly. But if you want to do really outstanding things, you need really high-tuned tools. And people understand this. If you go and look at the user interfaces and things like AutoCAD and some of the mechanical engineering tools, it takes a really long time and a lot of skill to get up to being really, really good. Even Photoshop is that way. It's pretty tricky to get Photoshop mm-hmm. down. But for some reason, people have never wanted in just the basic things. So that's been a huge problem. And also, you know, Doug is really an advocate of sort of this dynamic structure of things, of having documents with a very dynamic structure to them. And that's never worked well. You know, I mean, people just, they want their left to right, top to bottom, fixed format stuff, and it's just been extremely difficult for it to catch on. It is a little bit, though. I mean, if you look at things like Twiki, do you know about Twiki?
No.
T-W-I-K-I. I don't have a clue what it stands for. It's a web-based system which allows you to basically create very, very simple web pages very, very easily.
Oh, yeah, WikiWeb, yes.
It's a wiki web. And these are now finally catching on. Mm-hmm. And so this would be like, you know, sort of where we were in 1965 or something. But they're becoming popular finally. Dynamic, link-based, da-da-da-da-da, people dynamically creating stuff. And those features are finally seeping their way in, but they're like 30 or 40 years for people to get used to this.
We have a premise of how we've been talking to Doug for the last couple of months. We say that the 70s and 80s were not a failure. What happened, the way we're now mooting this, is he wanted a trained user, like you just said. Xerox and Apple guys wanted what they call the real user.
Well, I was one of the Xerox guys, and yes, this was a problem. I'm partially at fault for this.
That's okay, I'll edit that. But the magical thing that we're now looking at is what's happened in the last 20 years? That secretary, that real user, has become, just by using it every day, a trained user.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly the whole world has caught up, and we're now ready. We're saying, I'm tired of clicking on buttons and Word. Give me that power.
Well, and the more kids we get into this, the better off we are. You know, it's the high school kids who are really comfortable using the outrageous tools and don't know that they shouldn't.
I got you close.
That's our hope.
If you can just talk more about, elaborate on the whole people have changed, so now we fit Doug's mold, therefore we have become relevant to his vision, and then we'll leave in 2 minutes.
Okay, I'll do it a little bit longer than 2 minutes. I actually first noticed this effect, the effect of how people treat computers and how comfortable they are doing unusual things on them. When I was at SRI and on the side during all the midst of all this other stuff, I wrote some programs to help deaf kids practice arithmetic. And they would bring these kids in from the Palo Alto schools to SRI, small number, and they didn't know, they didn't come at it that the computer was this thing that needed to be treated with reverence and that you should be afraid of. And they would get in and do all kinds of things that would crash the programs and strange stuff.